How do you feel about pleasure? Do you like it? I'm Lance Leffler, and we'll look at the ultimate source of pleasure today on God Meets the Grind. When you're at work or working at home, what do you daydream about? What delight tantalizes your mind when it's unoccupied? For me, there's nothing like a sandy beach, a tropical white sandy beach with a tiki bar. How does this relate to the Psalms? I'm so glad you asked. We're in Psalm 16 today, and we're going to look at one of the most incredible verses in the Bible. Let's start in the middle of Psalm 16, verses 7 and 8. I bless the Lord who gives me counsel. In the night also my heart instructs me. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. The Lord gives me counsel, he says in verse 7. David exalts in the fact that God gives him counsel through the Bible. And let's tie the second line of verse 7 in, because it's basically another example of synonymous parallelism, where he says the same thing with different words. In the night, my heart instructs me. I can't break it all down right here, but that basically refers to God instructing your heart in the night. Look at Psalm 17, verse 3 on your own for an interesting parallel. Now on to verse 8. Everybody stop and notice this. He says, I have set the Lord always before me. Did you catch that? I have set the Lord, Yahweh, always before me. Here's the application for today's message before we even get to the end of the episode. Make this a practice, a discipline, and eventually it'll become a habit to set Yahweh, or Jesus for us New Testament believers, before you. What does that mean, Lance? I think it means to keep God front and center, or top of mind. Is that a British saying? Basically, to try to think about the Lord as much as you can. So there's your homework. Oh, let me say one more thing about this to help inspire you the way it inspires me. Here's what just makes sense to me. If God is the most amazing being in the world, since he dreamed up and created every amazing thing there is, and if God is always present with me, then I'm going to do whatever it takes to break up whatever is blocking my experience of his presence and the joy and pleasure that comes with his presence. Much more to say on this later. I want to take the last section of Psalm 16 as one chunk, then we'll break down the parts. Listen to verses 9 through 11. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my whole being rejoices. My flesh also dwells secure. For you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, or let your Holy One see corruption. You make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. David begins this section by saying, therefore my heart is glad, referring back to his practice of focusing his attention on the Lord. A lot of you grew up with less than desirable church experiences, and it disturbed your view of God. You see him as austere, distant, cold, impersonal, or worse, as a wrathful, browbeating ogre. What David is saying is that God's company is pleasurable. And here's what you need to know about David. He was a screw-up. Well, let me explain, lest we draw the wrong conclusion about God. David wasn't just a screw-up. By that I mean he wasn't an antinomian. That's someone who doesn't care about God's commandments but still shows up at church. You probably know someone like that. No fear of God, no respect for God. I know that's none of you because from the research I've done, my listeners are awesome. It wasn't David either. He loved God's laws and instruction, but he did some major boofs, including, but not limited to, adultery, murder, or at least conspiracy to commit murder, polygamy, and dereliction of parental duties. He was not some sort of unalloyed hero. If anybody should experience God as an ogre, it's David. But, and this is a big but, he came back to the Lord after his failures and repented and sought God's grace and forgiveness and his presence. I say that last part because it wasn't just some sort of transactional thing for David, like he just goes to confession, gets forgiven, and goes back to living his life how he wants. He craved the pleasure of God's company. So let's drink in David's experience of God's amazing grace, shall we? In verse 10, he says, "You will not abandon my soul to Sheol." Again, here's a parallelism because the second line of that verse says, "Or let your Holy One see corruption." Sheol is the word for the grave. The wicked, as they're called so many times in the Psalms, those who don't love God, will be abandoned to the grave. That's their end. They might have had some street named after them, but they're worm food now. But David is confident that God will show him the path of life. And he takes up this theme in verse 11 where he says, "You make known to me the path of life." You make known to me the path of life. What is the path of life exactly? I like the way Derek Kidner puts it in his commentary on this verse. He says, "The path of life is so called not only because of its goal, eternal life, but because to walk that way is to live, in the truest sense of the word, already." Did you get that? That's really important. Christianity is not just about hoping to land ourselves in heaven when this life is over, but to walk God's path of life here and now, because God is present on that path. God meets you on that path, in this life, here and now. Listen to verse 11. "In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore." This is one of the most incredible verses in the Bible. Psalm 16:11. Do yourself a favor and memorize it, and then get it tattooed on your arm or somewhere where you can easily read it every day. A disclaimer, I'm not actually advocating getting tattoos, especially to our underage listeners. I don't even have any tattoos myself. I'm just saying the verse is that important, so don't go telling your mom Lance said it was okay. I sometimes wonder just how many of us think that walking in the path of life that God sets out in His Word is really living. I suspect that a lot of us, and I'm not just thinking of us rebellious ones, I suspect that a lot of us secretly think of the Christian life as abstaining from fun, as a life of rules and drudgery. Why would I suspect this? Because sin is so fun. Christians don't like admitting that sin is fun, but there's got to be some reason we're all doing it. I brought this up to my church in a sermon one Sunday. I started talking about how sin is fun and that might explain why we all struggle with it. And then I said, "Hey, let's do this. Let's holler out our favorite sin on three. Ready? 1, 2. And then I said I was just kidding. But man, you should have seen the looks of horror on their faces. I'm pretty sure the first time guest we had that day never came back again. It was either that or the snake handling. I'm just kidding. We never did that. The point is, we all want freedom. That's at the top of everyone's list. Freedom to live how we want, do what we want. We want financial freedom to buy what we want and go where we want and experience what we want without being tied to the grind all day. This is a view of freedom that's natural to us. But everybody who's ever had the chance to live like that, except those who are insuperably shallow, will tell you it turned out not to be true freedom at all, but that it led to vice, to excess, to self-consumed narcissism, and most of all, meaninglessness. It turns out that true freedom is living according to God's instruction. We'll dive deep into this in the next episode when we look at Psalm 19. But it takes a certain amount of trust to hop onto God's path of life, doesn't it? To give up certain things that are bad for you, to love like Jesus loved, and to pay a price for it and for your integrity. It's not the yellow brick road, that's for sure. But it is the road that puts us right with God, and that is true pleasure, the way God designed it. To be right with God is the greatest feeling there is. To know you're forgiven, that you belong to Him, and that He's pleased with you. I spent a lot of my youth having adults not pleased with me and my behavior. So when I found the way to really live, it was like the lights were turned on for the first time. Here's the bottom line for you bottom liners. If you forget everything else I say in this episode, remember this. Psalm 16 is trying to tell us that God is delightful. He's the ultimate source of all delight. So how could He not be? Like the mighty Mississippi River, for all that it offers along its 2,340-mile course, it starts in one specific spot, Lake Itasca in Minnesota. Oh, there's a twist to this psalm. I'll leave it to you to chase down on your own. But in the book of Acts in the New Testament, written 1,000 years after Psalm 16, the Apostle Peter and then the Apostle Paul both refer to this psalm, to the part where David says, "For you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, or let your Holy One see corruption." And they apply it to Jesus' resurrection. That's pretty cool. Peter and Paul use it as a defense of Jesus' resurrection. That's Acts 2:27 and 13:34. So the psalm has a dual reference to David's life and any follower of God, and to the resurrection of Christ, which becomes the basis for that eternal life in God's presence that David longed for. Thanks for listening. I want to ask you to do a couple of things, if you would. Please go and like our God Meets the Grind Facebook page. And if you like this episode, please share it with somebody. For more encouragement, to read my blog, or to partner with this ministry, please go to our website, godmeetsthegrind.com.